Hey everybody, before we get into the show, I do want to let you know that we have another live show coming up Thursday, April 18th at 6 p.m. at Maya Cinemas in North Las Vegas. We are going to be talking about the vampire ballerina horror comedy Abigail. This movie looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. And joining me to talk about it are my wife, Gina Mazzoni, film student Perry Markle, and filmmaker and Sin City Horror Club founder Nick Woods. It's going to be a great time, great conversation. There's an enter to win contest going on right now on my website, piecingpod.com. You can find a link in the show notes. Enter to win some tickets. And otherwise, tickets are available from Maya Cinemas. And I hope to see you there on Thursday, April 18th at 6 p.m. Alright, welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today on the show, we are talking about Mafia Mama, a very ridiculous but very fun comedy starring Toni Collette as a woman who inherits the mafia, basically. And it's out now in theaters. And I had a lot of fun with this movie, and I had a great time talking about it with returning co-host Joe Black. We get into a bunch of great puzzle pieces here, so that is coming up in a second. Before we get to it, though, I do want to remind you, as always, to make sure you are subscribed to Piecing It Together wherever you listen to podcasts, wherever you're listening right now. Go hit the subscribe button or follow button or whatever your app has. Maybe it's a little plus sign. I don't know. Whatever it is, make sure you're subscribed. You can also follow us on social media at Piecing Pod. Join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where we continue the conversation about all the movies we talk about here on the show. And other than that, you know, just keep on listening. We appreciate it. So, with that said, let's get to our conversation about Mafia Mama. Joe Black is back with us. We're going to talk about Mafia Mama. Joe, how you doing?
Oh, it's so much better now that I've seen Mafia Mama.
Yes.
I have been anticipating this movie for a minute now. I forget what I saw. It was a horror film, Knock at the Cabin. I saw that. I came in a little bit late during the trailers and I caught the last half of this. And in the last half of it, my wife was already in the theater. I was like, oh my God, that looks really good. And she goes, well, enjoy.
Yeah.
Like the implication that she would not be there.
And if you remember, I also saw Knock at the Cabin that same weekend. And when I got home from it, I messaged you. I just saw a trailer for a movie called Mafia Mama. And the first thing I thought was, this looks like a Joe Black movie. And so I guess I'm right.
Yeah. Through and through, it's so funny. I like, of course, would never use this as a piece, but I made a movie in 2013, 10 years. Holy shit. 10 years ago is my first movie that I made in LA called The Setup. That was, this movie is very similar, not in like, it, just in like the tone and like the stuff that happens in that movie. Mine's about two people who go on a blind date and it turns out the girl's ex-boyfriend was a Russian spy and they get kidnapped by terrorists and escape and are on the run, you know, so it's very similar, like a fish out of water kind of, and right up my alley. And this movie was like so much better than I thought it would be. Like I thought I was just going to love it, you know, just on premise, but like the actual movie was like so much better put together than I could have ever expected.
So. And I'm totally with you, and we'll get into puzzle pieces in a second here, but we're recording this before the embargo has lifted, and I have a feeling this movie is going to get trashed to hell tomorrow when the reviews start coming out. Yeah, I really do, but I'm with you, though. I loved it. I was laughing the whole time. I thought from the get-go, I was like, Toni Collette looks like she's just having a ball doing this, and it's, I think it delivered on exactly the premise. It's one of those like very simple premise type of movies. I think that'll maybe reflect in some of our puzzle pieces here, but it's just a very simple setup, and I think it delivers jokes in that setup.
Yeah, and it does it with integrity, too. Like, I had no idea that Catherine Hardwicke made this movie. And the whole time I was watching it, I was like, who directed this? You didn't need to direct this movie this well. Like, kind of like Adam Driver's performance in 65. It's like, you don't need to be this good in this movie. You know what I mean? Mm. But like, The directing was solid. The writing was solid. Toni Collette's performance was super solid. Then I see it's Catherine Hardwicke at the end, and I'm like, oh, well, there you go. You know, they got a real filmmaker to make this movie. You know, sure. that makes all the difference.
Absolutely. Well, let's get into some puzzle pieces. What do you have for your first one?
Okay, well, you talked about like the basic general, and I'm going to do a basic general first puzzle piece, which is the movies of, was it Nia Vardalos? Like the My Big Fat Greek Wedding, the Connie and Carla.
Sure.
My Life in Ruins. It's all three of those movies really combined, you know, where it's nothing but like the stereotypes of the family and their expectation of you. So, you know, but that's My Big Fat Greek Wedding. And then you got Connie and Carla, which has Toni Collette in it, which, you know, is the crime affiliated. They're hiding out, you know, like from the crime people or whatever. And then you've got My City in Ruins, where she actually goes to Italy in her little like midlife crisis or whatever. But kind of like, I remember I read a review years ago for We Bought a Zoo, where they were like, this is nothing but a Tim Allen movie made with integrity. You know, and that's how I felt about this. This is like a Nia Vardalos movie made with integrity. Like, Toni Collette is a really great actress. Catherine Hardwicke is a really great filmmaker. You know, and there's nothing wrong with simple, and there's nothing wrong with general or even generic, as long as you do it with integrity. And I think that this movie really did that. I mean, this is a movie that like my grandmother and my mother will love just as much as I did. You know.
Right. Absolutely. That was something I was thinking too. Like I just got done talking about how I think that, you know, critics are going to kind of tear this one apart. But I do think though, in the same way that like a big fat Greek wedding or whatever, like it's going to connect with everybody's mom and everybody's grandma and like adults and people who just want a good fun time at the movies. I mean, look at another movie this weekend, Super Mario Brothers just came out and of course was trashed by critics, but everybody is loving it for better or worse. You know, it's like just a movie that kind of connects with its intended audience.
Yeah. Well, I'll never see that one personally. Yeah. You know, hashtag Morton and Jankel for life, you know.
Yeah, like, sure.
my love and support for the 1993 Mario Brothers. I can't, much like how I would not see Bumblebee when it came out because no bay, no way. Like I'm standing strong against Super Mario Brothers as well.
Was that a hashtag? No bay, no way.
I made it. I made it. I've made two Michael Bay hashtags in my lifetime. One was hashtag no bay, no way, which I did for that in Bad Boys 3. Mm-hmm. And then my other one is hashtag Michael Bay, BAE.
Oh, sure.
Which I use pretty frequently. I will be seeing the Beast Wars movie though. Like, sorry, Bay.
Yeah.
But you can't stop me. What's your first piece?
Well, I'll go to my first puzzle piece. And this is a movie I haven't seen in like a million years, but I think it's like a pretty like good, clear comparison that could be made here. And that's The Freshman, Marlon Brando, Matthew Broderick. And obviously, I think that going into this movie, there's a lot of classic mafia comedies that you could kind of go with. And I wanted to revisit this before this just to kind of, I don't know, just see how it holds up. Have you seen that movie in a long time?
I have not seen it in a long time, but I have seen it. I went through a Matthew Broderick phase after Godzilla came out.
Sure.
And that's when I saw it.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. And I remember liking it back in like high school when it came out in 1990. And I remember like finding the whole premise funny, but I kind of remember liking like all of those kinds of mafia type comedies, and maybe there'll be more in our puzzle pieces coming up, but especially having Marlon Brando in there as, you know, that character and basically making fun of himself. I think that this movie, you know, is clearly going for it, like just right into joking about The Godfather and joking about every single little mafia movie trope, and not scared to like be too on the nose or anything like that. It's just going all in on the premise and on the joke, and I feel like it's doing it in a way that The Freshman did as well.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, it's funny, it's so funny, I have two gripes with Mafia Mama that keep me from giving it a perfect score. One of them is that it should have been called Mama Mafia. Like, that really bothers me.
Yeah, I agree with
really,
you. That would have been a better
title. Really, I can't believe that they didn't do it. Like, I feel like what happened was like somebody printed the poster and fucked it up, and like they just didn't care enough to like fix it afterwards. Like, well, we made one.
Yeah.
You know. But that, and then I did not, the Godfather references actually didn't land for me. Like it, only because like that seemed like such a movie thing. You know what I mean? Like it was the one thing that felt like, oh, this is like film people wrote this. I'm very sensitive.
I guess
to that kind
so. To me, that is part of the appeal of the movie, though, is that it is a very movie, and I think that it is like it knows exactly what it's parodying and what it's like what it's playing with, and so like it's just a very knowing wink. I think I thought that worked.
That's fair. I'm just kind of in like a what do they call the old man yelling at clouds when it comes to like. When it comes to this postmodern thing that like everybody thinks that they can do anymore.
Yeah.
So like I maybe I'm just a little too easily triggered by that kind of thing.
Sure.
Them referencing The Godfather though, I don't know that I want to count this as one of my pieces, but did you ever see that movie The TV Set with David Duchovny?
You know, I did see that.
It was also in Connie and Carla. Interesting. Yeah, well there's like the running gag where his assistant hadn't seen Taxi Driver and he kind of like used that to negate her like opinion the whole movie.
Okay. Yeah, I forgot about that movie. Yeah. I wonder
there's
if that
a reason.
Holds up. Yeah.
It's okay. The first 10 minutes you get the whole point of the movie and it really sets it up brilliantly, and then the rest of the movie you don't even need to watch it. But the first 10 minutes is like it's the best. But that's not one of my puzzle pieces. Right. No, we're talking about Mafia Mama.
So what is your next puzzle piece?
Under the Tuscan Sun, which they also reference in the movie.
Sure.
I was very surprised that that Mafia Mama actually like went the route of Under the Tuscan Sun in the end. I don't know why I didn't see that coming, that she would like choose not to be with the man and choose, you know what I mean? Like I don't know why I didn't expect that. And it actually kind of surprised me that they not only reference it, but it actually is just Under the Tuscan Sun. But somebody gets their scrotum ripped out with a high heel shoe. And like Under the Tuscan Sun, which could have just been another throwaway, forgettable, you know, stupid studio rom-com like Leap Year or something. You get a great director and you get a great actress, Diane Lane, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And you make a classic. I'm so excited now to see actually if you're right, if critics don't like this movie. Very interesting. But yeah, Under the Tuscan Sun.
It's going to be interesting to see the reaction. But yeah, no, absolutely. Again, it like just as much as the mafia stuff, it's that too. So like it's referencing it, it's playing with it, and it's doing basically that, but in a much more ridiculous kind of way. So definitely.
And I get it. Eat, Pray, Fuck is funnier than making fun of Under the Tuscan Sun. But it definitely is not like an Eat, Pray, Love thing. Like it's Under the Tuscan Sun, this movie.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I'll go to my next piece, which really is kind of just every recent Adam Sandler movie. All the Netflix ones. You know, everybody likes to joke about how it's just him, you know, making an excuse to get his friends and go on vacations and shoot them under the guise of making a comedy movie. And this was shot on location in Italy, and it is Catherine Hardwick and Toni Collette, and this cast is going out there and just having a fun time in a beautiful location. And I think that part of what makes this movie work is the location. You know, it's just, it feels like a real movie like we've been talking about, and it feels like they're using the location, they're using Italy to the fullest.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I really hate when people say that about Adam Sandler's comedies, though, because like, first of all, the idea that like Adam Sandler wouldn't just go on vacation with his friends if he wanted to is insane. Also that like his vacation wouldn't be paid for by the studio if he just wanted to do that is insane. And also anybody who says that, oh, they just did that so you can go hang out with his friends on vacation, obviously you've never made a movie, because it's, no matter what the movie, even if it's something simple in your mind, it's really hard to make a movie. Sure. And in doing so, he's also implying hundreds up to thousands of people. And he also is notoriously like a work, like has a really strong work ethic, much to the chagrin of his friends. Like they talk about it in interviews. So I'm going to defend Adam Sandler.
please do.
But
but
I loved Murder Mystery too. You know, and here's the thing. Movies used to do that. People actually used to go to exotic locations to shoot movies because we, the audience, couldn't go to these places. And this is how we got to go to these places. It wasn't all green screen and done on the back. Like, they actually went to these cool exotic locations. So I actually appreciate that. Even that, the Fletch movie from last year. They went to Italy to film part of it, and Greg Mottola did his very best to make Italy look ugly, but he failed because Italy is so beautiful. So like, why not actually go there and take it in like they did with this movie?
Sure.
Yeah. I'll say it's like an Adam Sandler comedy in that like the leg, Monica Bellucci having that cool metal leg, that's just like Deuce Bigalow. His wife had the one sure. leg, remember? And then she dies at the beginning of two, and he walks around, and like the one guy makes like a fucking weed pipe out of it and stuff.
Yeah.
So
I also thought of Deuce Bigalow, actually. I was thinking about including that one on my list. I didn't, but yeah, definitely.
European Gigolo.
Yes. And, you know, I would also say before we move on to your next piece, like, you know, that's another thing with this movie is it's kind of like, you know, we get, you know, a movie every year or every other year with somebody like Adam Sandler or Adam Sandler himself doing these kinds of just broad, silly comedies. And, you know, why not a Toni Collette version of that kind of a thing? And she does a great job in the role.
We got a really good look at what she could do comedically, like around like with Connie and Carlo. That just wasn't a very good movie. But then even in Little Miss Sunshine,
sure.
you know, and she got her start doing these kind of comedies with Muriel's Wedding and things like that. And I know that everybody was like really like on one a few years ago when she didn't get nominated for Hereditary. But I just think that actually speaks more to like the movie than her. But like, I don't like this stigma that movies like this have. Where, like, it's like, yeah, we'll just throw in some kind of flavor of the month actress or something, you know? No, like, every movie deserves to have this caliber of actor. You know, it really does. And that's why people stopped going to theaters. It wasn't because they got bored of movies like this. It's because they got bored of all the corner cutting. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They got bored of green screens. They got bored of Jennifer Aniston and Gerard Butler. You know what I mean? You give them quality stuff and they'll show back up. And I mean, and that's proven, you know, look at Air, which just came out. It's doing pretty well for that kind of a movie. You know what I mean? And it's because it's really well written, really well directed, and a really great cast and a really simple story.
Sure.
I don't know where that started. Sorry. Adam Sandler. He's
what do you got for your next piece? Yes.
I have, speaking of generic movies that nobody likes, Killers. With Ashton Kutcher and Katherine Heigl.
Sure. I don't think I ever actually saw that, but yeah, definitely people don't like it. So,
well, they're, you know, I'm not one of those people. I love that movie. I did not want to see it. It did not look watchable, let alone decent, even. And I actually won tickets to it, but it was I won tickets to a free meal at a restaurant that I had been wanting to try. And tickets to it. It was like a package deal.
Nice.
So like, so I went to the restaurant and it was fine. And then I went to that movie and I was blown away. It's written by a really good writer, a guy named Ted Griffin, who wrote Ravenous and Ocean's 11 and Matchstick Men. And he produced like Up in the Air. So he's a really good writer. And Katherine Heigl is an actress who really, really got screwed over by the industry. She's one of those people that like really fought for integrity, and people just pigeonholed her and called her a bitch because she's a woman and was fighting for the integrity of what she was doing, even when it was something as silly as Grey's Anatomy. She cared. So, of course, she had to be taken down. And Ashton Kutcher, he's almost like Keanu Reeves, where he's a brilliant actor, but he's just so incredibly like gorgeous that it's like it's hard to take him seriously. Much like Keanu Reeves is a brilliant actor, but like his voice, it's hard to, you know, see him as anything other than Johnny Utah.
Sure.
It's just a bunch. And the guy who directed Legally Blonde. It was just a bunch of people who don't get their due. And they came together and they made a really fun, simple, cool movie. And it reminds me of Mafia Mama, because the whole thing is Katherine Heigl is married to Ashton Kutcher for years and their marriage isn't going well. And then suddenly she gets thrown into this scenario where it turns out her husband is a spy, a hitman, like an assassin, you know, and they get thrown into this big espionage kind of thing. So it's fun seeing this, like, you know, quote unquote, suburban housewife, unfulfilled suburban housewife kind of coming into her own through a very violent, unintentionally violent kind of adventure, which is one of the things that I really loved about Mafia Mama was that it's a pretty violent movie.
It's surprisingly violent. Like when it wants to be, it just like ratchets it up like really quickly into just gore, like straight up gore for like a few minutes at a time.
Yeah, well, that scene, the best gore scene in the movie, where she hits the guy in the dick repeatedly with her high heel, and then in his eyeball until it pops out, and then of course the follow up line in the next scene where he's like, they found pieces of scrotum in his eye hole, like that's really funny, but yeah. That scene is so violent. But here's the example, I mean, of like just really good writing. Like, they set you up earlier in the movie that she has the capability to go there. Because when we first, like, she debates on going on the trip, she's in a self-defense training class thing, right? Like, mm-hmm. So that's perfect. That's all you need to set that up. But then that scene, as I'm watching it, I'm like, damn, this is really violent, even considering what we've seen so far. But that scene is the scene where she transforms into the Don.
Sure.
Into the, you know what I mean? Like that, it's at the end of that scene where she finally tells her boss, fuck you, and becomes the head of the mafia. The scene is violent almost in like a baptism way or like a line crossing that she can never go back from. So it doesn't exist as just some like mindless, stupid gore thing out of nowhere. It's actually a transformative scene that has been set up from act one. That's called writing. Marvel, take notes. You know what I mean? Like, That's really good writing, and it's simple. It's not anything like game changing or like, you know, it's good writing.
Yeah.
Just like Killers. Shout out to Ted Griffin, unsung hero of the industry.
There you go.
I think you'd like Killers.
I wonder if I ever actually saw it. I really don't remember seeing it, but.
I think you'd dig it.
Yeah, I might. Yeah. I like Ashton Kutcher.
It's on Netflix.
I like Knocked Up. You know,
it's got Usher in it.
Well, there you go. That's something. I will go for my next piece to Ghost Dog from Jim Jarmusch, which has some of the most cartoonishly ridiculous mafia mob bosses that you've ever seen in a movie. Even though it's not even like the funniest movie in the world. Like, I love that movie, but like, it's not even like a straight up comedy or anything. But the mob bosses are just so ridiculous and so inept. And that's another thing with this movie. Like, even though Toni Collette is like, you know, totally unprepared for any of this, nobody even stands a chance against her because they're just so inept in everything that they're trying to do. Mm-hmm. And they're so ridiculous. And that's just funny. I mean, it's ridiculous the way they're set up. And they play it so well, all those actors.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. It's so funny. Like, if I were to think, like, what's like one movie that like sums up what I know of you, it would be Ghost Dog. I just picture little like 14-year-old you, like in eighth grade, like scribbling pictures of Ghost Dog on your notebooks and stuff like that.
Sure.
Yeah. That to me is a David Rosen movie through and through. Maybe one of these days I'll rewatch that movie. I don't like Jarmusch. He's so into himself. It's putrid. But like, I do like Dead Man, which I believe is the one he did right before that. And I've always wanted to revisit Ghost Dog. So if you say that these are similar, I'll take you up on it. I'll definitely give that another whirl.
Nice. You definitely should.
Yeah. I hope so, because I'm gonna watch it now.
All right. What do you got for your next piece?
All right. So this is one of those movies. When I was growing up, there were so many movies that my parents and I that were like classics in our household that nobody else had ever heard of. But I didn't realize that nobody else had ever heard of until I got into the real world myself. Mm-hmm. And one of those was an early 90s action movie called If Looks Could Kill. Have you seen this movie?
I remember this being a movie. I just don't recall if I ever actually saw it. 91.
With Richard Grieco.
Sure. Yeah.
It's so good. It's about this kid who fails his senior year of French class and he has to make up for it in summer school, but the French class is going to France, so he gets to go with them. But at the airport, he gets switched. His identity gets switched with a secret agent that has the same name as him. And and the secret agent is so deep undercover, when he shows up in France, everybody thinks that he's this secret agent because they have no idea what this agent looks like.
Yeah.
And because he's like seven or he's 18 and he's like, he gets like a cool super spy car, he just like goes along with it and kind of gets in like way over his head and then has to use like his teenager shenanigan ways to save the day.
Oh,
it's dude. It's a formula that people have tried to repeat a million times and never done it as well. And like, it's one of those movies too, where like every actor who's in it, whenever I see them in anything, I'm like, oh my God, it's the French teacher. You know what I mean? Or, oh my God, it's Augusta Steranko. Or, and Linda Hunt, she plays like an assassin in it, which I mean, automatically like hilarious. Linda Hunt is the big bad guy's assassin. And her like secret weapon is a necklace, a gold necklace that she can actually like whip out and use as a whip.
Hell yeah.
And she like, she kills the first secret agent with it. Like it's her facing off against, oh, what's his fucking name from The Who?
Roger Daltrey.
Roger Daltrey from The Who plays a super secret spy named Blade, who like fights his way into this facility, and then he faces off against Linda Hunt in a skirt suit, who like just annihilates him with her like gold necklace whip. It's the movie is fucking incredible. Yeah. But Mafia Mama reminded me of the same thing, where it's, you know, take like a suburban, you know, goof, put them into this beautiful European location, thrust them into this insane, unpredictable and violent scenario that they're completely unprepared for. And their kind of innocence and ineptness is what actually causes them to rise to the occasion.
Sure.
It's brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I got to revisit that. That sounds great in an early 90s kind of way.
Great. Darren Star wrote it. The guy who created Beverly Hills 90210 and Sex and the City. He wrote it. It's only like 88 minutes long. It's fucking awesome. And they even have a scene like in Mafia Mama where she thinks that she's being seduced by the mafia guy, and he's actually trying to poison her. There's a scene very similar to that in If Looks Could Kill, where he thinks he's going to hook up with this, you know, this super hot chick that he met at this club, but it turns out she's like an evil assassin, and she puts a scorpion in his bed. You know, like, but he thinks it's a very similar scene. Yeah, I think you'd love that movie, actually. You watch If Looks Could Kill, I'll watch Ghost Dog.
Perfect. We'll make notes afterwards. I like it. Mm-hmm. I'll go to my next piece, which I'm going to go with Mel Brooks movies in general. All those kinds of spoofs that Mel Brooks is known for. Just very slapsticky, very on the nose, kind of like joking on, like, this sounds like a criticism, but like easy targets, because like the mafia movies are just so ripe for making fun of. And all these characters just seem like the kind of things that a Mel Brooks movie would maybe take on. I think like if you had to pick one, maybe High Anxiety would be the best one to consider, just because of the first half of just, you know, how, you know, anxious she is the whole time, like getting into the whole mafia and everything. But really just a lot of that kind of spoof and slapstick energy that you associate with a Mel Brooks movie.
Yeah, I'm just not a Mel Brooks fan, like, at all. Mm. When I was little, I liked Robin Hood Men in Tights, but that was really because I liked Robin Hood.
Sure.
But, like, I've tried so many times. I've fallen asleep to Young Frankenstein in the theater multiple times, because I keep trying. Oh. Like, sincerely, I keep trying to watch these movies, and I just can't do it. I hate Blazing Saddles. The producers, I can barely get through the opening credits. I find it so boring. It's just not my brand. You know what I mean? Like, it's a little too, I feel like he's like the precursor to Seth MacFarlane, where he's only, all he's doing is making the same jokes that all of we, all your friends would make while watching a serious movie of that kind. You know what I mean? Like, there's no, they're almost like, to what you were saying, we're like the most obvious targets. You know what I mean? There's nothing particularly clever to me about them. And his pacing, his rhythm of his jokes, by the time the joke happens, I've been waiting for that joke. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like,
I think the pacing is what makes it land, though. Like, I think the pacing in his humor is always just so on. But I guess, you know, different strokes. I mean, I know you're a big Woody Allen guy, and it's, you know, that's more your speed, I think.
Yeah, for sure. In fact, it's funny. Nice segue, because that's my last puzzle piece, is a Woody Allen movie.
All right.
It's Broadway Danny Rose.
Okay.
Which is one of those movies that, like, filmmakers, like, you know, when you talk about Woody Allen movies, like, you know, there's like the instant, you know, like Annie Hall, Hannah and Her Sisters, you know, Blue Jasmine, you know, the go-tos, the Midnight in Paris. But then there's like his 80s work, especially, is like the era that like filmmakers really latch on to with him. Like the '80s was his era for filmmakers, and Broadway Danny Rose is probably like I know that like Judd Apatow has cited it as one of his favorite films. I know that Jason Reitman has talked about it being one of his favorite films. It's a movie about a manager, a talent manager, but he manages the worst acts, played by Woody Allen, named Danny Rose. He manages the worst acts. Like he has like a one-legged tap dancer, a stuttering ventriloquist, you know, like acts like that, right?
Yeah.
And he's got this one big act who's this big Italian meatball named Lou, who's a singer, and he's kind of starting to have a comeback, and he's got this big show that a bunch of important people are going to be at. And he asks Danny to bring his mistress to the show as like his guest, like to be a beard for him so that his mistress can be there and see him perform. Mm. And so Danny goes to pick up the mistress in New Jersey, and it's Mia Farrow, who's this total mob mall, like, you know, like fast talker, you know, like mean spirited, like, you know, just your typical Jersey mob mall chick. And of course,
sure.
The mob, a mobster is in love with her and thinks that Danny is her like secret lover. So he puts out a hit on Danny, and the whole movie is them trying to like clear the air that Danny's not, you know, stealing her, and also get her to the show on time for his, so that his, singer can perform and he can finally have a hit act.
Sure.
And it, you know, it's again, it's just your typical, like, you know, fish out of water mafia comedy, like we were talking about, but it just, being, you know, 80s era Woody Allen, it's got some of his best like little zingers. Like at one point, Mia Farrow's telling him this story about like, oh yeah, this guy was hitting on me, and so they shot him in the eyes. And he goes, Woody Allen goes, shot him in the eyes? Oh my god, he's blind? And she goes, dead. And he goes, oh right, because the bullets go right through. You know, it also is a great Thanksgiving movie because it all takes place around Thanksgiving. And the Macy's Day Parade nice. Actually has a big to doing it, and Woody Allen was nominated for Best Director for it, you know, but it's right still on. Kind of an unknown, you know, Woody Allen movie among, you know, most audiences, and I think that's another one that I would highly recommend to you. I think you would get a big kick out of that one. It's also 85 minutes. It's really short.
I think it's interesting that we've got Mel Brooks, Woody Allen, Adam Sandler, like we've got all these big like multi-movie decades long runs of huge comedies, like, and this is like right in there. And we know mm-hmm. that we're like kind of going through a down period for comedy lately, at least like, you know, just a straight up studio comedy. And so I think that that's clearly what this is trying to do. It's trying to fit into that void that we haven't had in so long.
Yeah, and we're all talking, and all those people are Jewish comedians, and here we are talking yeah. about like the mafia. But, you know, like the Catholic guilt and Jewish guilt, I mean, we share that as people, you know, like as cultures.
Oh,
so
absolutely.
That makes sense, I guess.
Yeah, definitely.
No Scorsese movies yet, though, so there we go.
Yeah, no Scorsese, but I have one last puzzle piece. It's not Scorsese, but you know what? You actually mentioned Robin Hood Men in Tights when we were talking about Mel Brooks, but just Robin Hood in general. Like, I love the idea Ooh. That her whole big plan for the mafia involves basically robbing pharmaceuticals and selling them to people who can't afford them or giving them. And it's a little underdeveloped, maybe. I mean, it is just a comedic moment, but I just thought that was a great way to use the mafia for good.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And using the winery as a front, which yeah. I mean, I might do one of my, you know, psycho deep dives into the movie and see how this is actually a film about the career of Francis Ford Coppola. Cause that could be a thing.
Yeah,
no,
sure.
And I love that. I always love that trope too, of like somebody who like doesn't know what they're doing. Like Legally Blonde is a great example of this. Another great, just perfect on the money comedy. She should have been nominated for an Oscar. Her performance right. is so good. Much like Colette here, that they come in and their outsider perspective helps like kind of get things back in order. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because the first thing she does, it's one of my favorite jokes in the whole movie, when she goes to drink the wine when she first gets there, and she like spits it all up. And like, I thought the joke was going to be that it was like actually good wine and she's used to bad wine because she's, you know, just suburban housewife, you know. But she's like, oh my God, this wine is terrible. And Monica Bellucci's like, yeah, yeah. It's notoriously terrible wine. It's we don't know what we're doing. You know, and she's like, well, you got to care more. But again, see, they set that up. She's like a products person and she knows how to market a product and she knows how to, you know what I mean? And her whole problem is that she actually cares and she's trying to get it to the people who need it. But all the people want, you know, again, like it's just good writing. And if movies keep getting made this way, then people will come back. You know what I mean? They really will.
Yeah.
I mean, it's already starting to show. But
yeah,
to your Robin Hood. I love it. What's your favorite Robin Hood movie?
I mean, honestly, it's Men in Tights.
I think the best moment in Men in Tights is when they're having the sword fight and he stabs at him, but he misses and he stabs the guy's sandwich. I really like that.
I like when Richard Lewis's mole keeps moving around. That's my favorite part.
I mean, I have a mole? Yeah, I mean, but again, I tried rewatching that movie during the lockdown. And it was not nearly as funny as I remember. But even still, when I talk about it, like talking about it is more fun than actually watching the movie.
I haven't seen it in many years. I need to rewatch it one of these days. But you may be right. Like it may be just more fun to reminisce about some of the best bits and like that's
right.
that.
Yeah. And I mean, you start with like the 1993 of the rap group with the backwards hats and like the yo check it out, you know, it's I don't know, man. But yeah, Prince of Thieves is my favorite Robin Hood, so what the fuck do I know, you know what I mean?
You know, talk about movies, that's about as
oh
movie
god
movies
yeah.
you can get.
Yeah, Kevin Costner, I think it's his third line in the movie as he puts his hand down on a thing and says, "This is English courage," in his like thickest Southern California Visalia accent you could ever have. But it's, oh man, that movie delivers hard. I'm a huge Robin Hood fan though. Like even that Taron Egerton one that just came out a couple years ago, like, you know me, I'm pretty quick to walk out of a movie, you know?
Yeah.
And the fact that I didn't walk out of that movie kind of just says how much I love Robin Hood. You know what I mean? Cause it's terrible. But like I sat through the whole thing because it's Robin Hood. It's kind of like Batman. The Batman that just came out with Twilight in it. Oh, Catherine Herg. The Batman. Horrible movie. Just a miserable experience from start to finish. And I saw it three times because it's fucking Batman. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to sit there and commiserate with Batman about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways.
Anyway.
Catherine Herg.
Let's read down the finished puzzle list here and we'll get into some closing thoughts. You kicked it off with some Nia Vardalos movies, My Big Fat Greek Wedding, Connie and Carla, My City in Ruins. Then we went to The Freshman, Under the Tuscan Sun, Adam Sandler movies, Killers, Ghost Dog, If Looks Could Kill, Mel Brooks movies, Broadway Danny Rose, Robin Hood, and Legally Blonde. Yeah, I don't know. Any closing thoughts? Anything we didn't quite get to here?
I could watch any of those movies right now. And isn't that the sign of like you know, we talk about like, what's your favorite movie of all time? You know, oh, my favorite movie is Popeye. My favorite movie is Adaptation. That's me playing both parts in this, you and I. Really, at the end of the day, it's like, what is your real favorite movie of all time? You know what I mean? It's the movie that you can just like pop on, you know?
Yeah.
Like Team America World Police really is probably the right answer. You know, you know what I'm saying? And
definitely for 27-year-old Dave. It was probably it.
But that list you just read off, like, you know what I mean? I mean, of course, there's a couple little, you know, like Broadway Danny Rose, but like, those are the movies that non-movie people want to watch. Like, that's what they want to put on. They don't want to put on, you know, even something like Everything Everywhere All at Once. They don't want to put that shit on. They want to put on Legally Blonde, you know?
Right.
Pretty Woman is one of the greatest movies ever made. And why? Because everybody can watch and enjoy that movie because it speaks so clearly and in such a simple way. And all it has to say is love one another and enjoy life. Boom. You know, and that's kind of this movie too, you know, and one thing I really do have a closing thought on is that, you know, there's this trope and people like to call it woke or progressive or whatever, where like all these movies, and I think it really, really started with Bridesmaids, where it's like the men in these movies are just mean, awful dogs. You know what I mean?
Or dumb as shit.
Yeah, exactly. It's one of the two. And what this movie did so... did you ever see that movie, How Do You Know, the James L. Brooks movie?
Another one that I haven't seen in forever.
So good. And one of the reasons it's so good is it does the same thing where it's... take the guy that she falls for in Mafia Mama, right? Or her mean bosses and stuff like that. The problem with the movie is not that all men are like this, quote unquote. Her problem in the movie is that she lets people treat her this way. Or that she is giving these kinds of people her power, right? Like, it's about her. It's not saying anything about men. It's saying something about these men. And, like, how do you know with Owen Wilson's kind of like, you know, his character, she's like, the movie's a love triangle with her and Paul Rudd and Owen Wilson. And she's like, who do I pick? And Owen Wilson is kind of like this, like, womanizing, you know, fun, flirty guy who she can't rely on, who's kind of, you know, but that movie doesn't dare condescend and like Bridesmaids does, where Kristen Wiig is just like, why doesn't John Hamm love me? You know, this movie is like Reese Witherspoon is like, why am I engaging with this? You know what I mean? Like, I'm smart enough to know what I'm getting into. And maybe the problem is that I'm getting into something like this. And that's what Mafia Mama does so well, is that it's not like an indictment of men. It's not all it is her saying, like, I have been giving my life and power over to people, and that's not what I need to do, you know? And at the same time, you get to make a little commentary about how, like, everything is heavily marketed toward men and how men run, you know, like, you get to do that as well, but your character is the one who has something to go through. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
And I really appreciated that.
Yeah, well, I mean, you've got a great performance from Toni Collette, even though it's like a big, silly comedy. I mean, she is great, and she really sells that transformation from beginning to end. And it, like you said at the beginning of the conversation, Catherine Hardwicke, a real director bringing in to make the movie. So that helps.
Yeah, I you know, it's, I remember when Adele started becoming famous and people were like, oh my God, can you believe how great of a singer she is? And I remember thinking, like, honestly, like, I feel like everybody who's singing on the radio should have to sound as good as Adele at the minimum. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't think that Adele's that great of a singer. I think that Adele is a singer. You know what I'm saying? And again, it's just because everything gets watered down. Oh, look, isn't it just as good when it's microwaved as when you put it in the oven? No, it's not. Like, it's really not. But we're so tired and we've got so much else to do that we'll take whatever you give us. You know what I mean? So I love it when a movie like this gets made. And again, I saw the trailer. I thought it was just going to be a movie that I would really enjoy. And what I got was, in my opinion, we'll see if any other critics or whatever agree with me, but I was like, whoa, holy shit. They actually went out of their way to do it right and make a good movie.
I am so excited to see what people think of this one, but I think that does it for Mafia Mama. Is there another movie you watched recently you'd like to recommend to our listeners?
Yeah, I mean, well, I was going to say Murder Mystery 2, but we already kind of talked about that. Murder Mystery 2 is one of those sequels that's like so good that it makes the first one better. Like, it's just a perfectly pitched comedy in a lot of the same ways that we were just talking about. But I'm actually going to, because I've spoken ill of him before, and I will forever and for the rest of my life, but I got to give credit where credit's due. I finally saw The Abyss.
Oh.
And I thought it was pretty great. I really, really, I watched, and giving Jimmy Cameron even more credit, I watched the director's cut. That's the version I watched. Mm. And I was like, you know what? This is pretty, pretty fucking great. And then thankfully, mercifully, the last horrible 15 minutes of the movie happened with the alien. And I was like, oh, thank God. Like, thank God I'm not about to give like a James Cameron movie like a 5-star rating. Like, oh, good. Because like that last 15 minutes is terrible. It did. It set the universe back right. But the first 2 hours of that movie, I was like, holy shit. Like, see, Jimmy, see what happens when you actually give a shit? Like, when you're actually, like, you know, it's something that interests you and you're angry right now, so you're taking it out on your characters, and that's fun, you know?
Is this a new, is it a new release? Like, a new, like, upscaled version or something like that?
No. I just rented the DVD from Cinephile Video in Santa Monica here in Los Angeles. You know, it's funny. True Lies is actually, like, the antithesis of what we've been talking about this whole time. Like, True Lies is like the stupid, horrible, nasty, misogynist, ugly version of like the suburban housewife who, you know, gets thrown into like the, you know, have you seen True Lies? What he does to his wife in that movie is like despicable. And he like never apologizes for it. And like he uses the CIA resources or whatever to like trap her in an interrogation room and basically like scream at her in a muffled voice, like, did you suck his dick? Do you still love your husband? You know, without ever, like, it's horrible. Like,
you know, I surprisingly have never seen True Lies. I feel like I should one day, but also, I don't know. We'll see. It might be very dated.
It's a great idea. It's a great idea with a couple of great action set pieces put together by a misogynist sociopath. Like, yeah, so, see, I can't just like be nice and be like, hey, you know, Jimmy Cameron, he hit a base hit with that Abyss. No, fuck him. Like, I can't do it. But yeah, I do recommend The Abyss. No, I take it all back. Just watch Murder Mystery 2.
There you go. Perfect. I love it. Joe, what do you got going on? I know that you're working on your new film.
Yeah, well, it's wrapped, really. I mean, there's a couple little sound things I want to fix and a couple of visual effects that my brother and I are going to tackle. But it's done. It's kind of done and ready, and it's a political-based... it's a sequel to our last film, Natasha Hall. This one's called Suffrage, and this one involves like an election day murder mystery. We're gonna play it in some festivals for a few months here, and then hopefully release it in November in time to begin the election year, since that'll be kind of be on everybody's mind. And also, the first film in the series, Natasha Hall, just got released by a company called Indie Rights. And is actually available now for rent or purchase on Amazon. It's cheap and it's a good movie. And we would really appreciate anybody who would. I hate that I have to do this. Rate and review the movie really helps us with the algorithm of all the streaming. But
isn't that the worst?
it's so. Like, I've shared with you, like, all the bullshit I'm going through right now in my personal life, and that ranks right up there with all of it. Like, I hate this side of it so much. But at the same time, it's really cool for the first time. This is 19 years that I've been making movies, and this is, like, the first time where I could say, hey, world, it's out there on an actual streaming platform, and you can rent or buy this movie that I really like, and I don't like all of my movies. This one I really like, and my wife is fucking incredible in it, and it looks amazing, and it's the beginning of hopefully a franchise, and it would mean a lot if you rented or bought it and left us a rating and a review and continued the journey when we release Suffrage in a few months here.
Absolutely. And everybody, if you do rent it and watch it, then you can go back and listen to our episode that we did where we talked about the background of the film and some puzzle pieces and all that. So go rent Natasha Hall.
Yes, please do. I mean, and David, you actually haven't seen the version that's available because after we screened it in Vegas, I basically treated the festival run as like a test screening thing too. So I went back and I trimmed it and I changed some things around and I added things and you could even yourself see a brand new Natasha Hall.
There we go. I'm gonna have to do that sometime soon. But Joe, it was great getting you back on the show. And I, as always, look forward to getting you back on again soon.
Sounds groovy. Thank you.
Come on, everybody. Hi, this is Wax Trax Records here on 2909 South Decatur. We buy all your old 45s, your old albums, any type of music memorabilia. Also, we sell music memorabilia, albums, CDs, and a lot. Come on down to Wax Trax, 2909 South Decatur, or give me a call at 702-362-4300. Thank you very much.
Why'd I play the Wax Trax ad on an episode about Mafia Mama? I don't know. I guess because there's Italians at Wax Trax, my family's record store, all the time, just chatting it up with my dad. So I don't know. Seemed like a good fit. But anyway, thank you so much for listening to Piecing It Together. I hope you enjoyed that conversation. Thanks to Joe Black for joining me on that one. And of course, if you're enjoying Piecing It Together, drop those 5 stars. I'd really appreciate it. Just like Joe asked you to drop 5 stars on his film, Natasha Hall. If you drop 5 stars on Piecing It Together in Apple Podcasts or Good Pods or Spotify, wherever you're listening, it would definitely help the show get seen by more people. So we do appreciate when you do that. Also, Don't forget, we have a live show coming up that Joe will be a part of. We have the Evil Dead Rise live episode of Piecing It Together coming up on Friday, April 21st, 7 p.m. Maya Cinemas in North Las Vegas, along with Joe Black. We also have Michael Keen and Jimmy Gonzalez. It's going to be a great show. I'm so excited. And I'll be announcing some more live shows soon. So, yeah. Make sure you're subscribed and following Piecing Pod on all the socials, the Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces Facebook group. Find out about all the stuff we got coming up. So other than that, we do have a Patreon, which I have to remind you about. I'm contractually obligated to let you know about the Patreon. No, I'm not, but I would appreciate your support. You can check it out, patreon.com/bydavidrosen, the Produced by David Rosen Patreon, where I post bonus and advanced content from Piecing It Together, Awesome Movie Year, and from my music career. Lots of great stuff over there, so check it out if you want to support the show that way. But of course, I'm just happy that you're out there listening. So let's close this thing out with a piece of music. I was trying to think if I have anything mafia-like or specifically Italian-sounding. I don't think I do. I'm sure I'm going to think of something after I've already finished editing this episode. But instead, Italian stuff, Jewish stuff. We talk a lot about Jewish stuff on this episode. Let's go with my Jewish comedy rap group, Fakakta, which is now defunct, but we have two albums out from back when I was in college. And every once in a while, I'll squeeze one of their songs onto the end of the episodes here. I'm going to go with a song called Nice Jewish Girls. I'm sure Toni Collette's character, Kristen, in Mafia Mama would like this song. So let's go with Nice Jewish Girls from Fakakta's album, You Took Us For Granted. Hope you enjoy it. We'll be back with more Piecing It Together real soon.
Comedy rap band. I take the shixes for sex, as Jewish girls for the head. But plus I love the way they ass is shaped like challah bread. I be telling them lies and all kinds of chaz arise. I get up in between their thighs and give that shmundi a try. I'm not a bad guy, I'm just trying to get them in bed and make them feel good from their toes up to the doily on their head. And I never got complaints from a Jewish girl or a goy, plus their parents always think I'm such a nice Jewish boy.
Nice Jewish girls shaking their asses all around the world. We're nice Jewish girls. We got super style, we go the extra mile. We're nice Jewish girls. Just because we're not trashy doesn't mean we're not slutty. Nice Jewish girls. Yeah, we got one for you, another one for your buddy. My butt? Good.
An All Points West production, produced by David Rosen in Las Vegas.